You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating and maybe give you plus five GOE along the way. This week's hosts are Carly,
Evie,
Tilda,
and Leigh. Hello.
Yay!
Hello.
Yay!
Hello, everyone. So this is the first episode of the podcast, Exciting Things. We've been talking about doing this for a while, and now It's finally happening.
We're very excited.
Yeah, and I think the reason why we started it was also, like, increasing the accessibility of figure skating to new fans and old fans, and also kind of offering an alternative perspective to the voices that already exist.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. A more international perspective as well, because we're from several different countries here.
As you may be able to tell from all our amazing and possibly confusing accents.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of us. There's a lot of accents. There's a lot of us. It's not just us four on the podcast. We've got a lot of people helping out. We're all friends here. We're all doing our own part. So every 2 weeks we hope to bring you some content that you may find interesting about figure skating and the world of figure skating and sport and all that jazz.
Exactly. And I mean, I think we wanted to start today by talking sort of about why we started this whole thing, which is about figure skating and kind of media accessibility and like how it comes across to us as fans, right?
Yes, definitely. So we're going to be covering accessibility in the show, as well as we're going to cover the latest news from the past couple weeks in the world of figure skating. And maybe if we have time, talk about some fun little things about our personal experiences with figure skating.
So I came into this whole thing because I'm like waving the banner about this issue of figure skating and media accessibility, because, you know, I think figure skating as a sport, no matter like what broadcast rights, what kind of TV channels are involved, the heart of figure skating and how it survives as a sport is always through its fans and through reaching like its audience and its public profile. And so like I'm really passionate about this topic because I think that while we have a lot of channels and various media covering figure skating now, I think there is so much more that we could do. And as fans, especially as new international fans, there are so many sort of issues there that I think we, like the sport and the people running the sport, could be more aware of. And I think that's kind of where I come from when it comes to talking about accessibility.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think figure skating is like, it's reasonably popular, but it's not outlandishly popular. Like, it definitely has a little occulty fan base, obviously, because we're doing this, you know, that kind of signals that. But it's definitely on the small side, and it's kind of, it can get really hard to find good sources for figure skating if you don't know where you're looking specifically.
Yeah, and also since if you're from the English-speaking part of the world, or even as I'm from Sweden, and there is no content in Swedish about figure skating, which means that I have to sort of move to the English speaking part. And then it feels very focused on, like, a lot of the media is based in America. And then that sort of feels like something I can't quite relate to as a European. And then it's sort of like a vacuum, you know, where I have an issue finding something that I can relate to.
Yeah, as for me, I think as sort of a newer fan, it's kind of affected me in a way, like, accessibility is a big thing because I kind of find myself squandering for sources of things. And, like, I'd love to be more into the sport, but I can't find ways to do that because of the lack of accessibility. And so I think bringing that more into sight and can help bring more fans into it, which is what they want.
Definitely. Yeah.
When I think of accessibility, I kind of divide it into several like key areas of issues, right? So there's that first issue where we're talking about sort of the current official ways to like even get access to figure skating content. And so I find that because it's a niche sport, because it's maybe not as well funded as, you know, the easily accessible sports like tennis or soccer with like really low barriers to entry, you find that the official broadcasts are very segmented into like these specific countries and regional zones. So, you know, if we talk about kind of the main broadcasters, you might have the, you know, Eurosports channels, you'll have the Americas, and you will have like Russia and then Japan. And those are kind of, you know, the only, they're really country segmented and they're often geo-blocked. So as a way, and even like coming from a small country like Australia, you know, we might get one or two figure skating like broadcasts on TV, but they're delayed, right? And as figure skating fans, as this, and like, you know, no fan wants to watch, you know, the competition 5 days after it's been aired live. Yeah. Like the spirit of figure skating,
especially that. With the delayed broadcast and stuff, like that would have probably been okay like maybe 10 years ago when the internet and Twitter and real-time updates weren't a thing. But when you're experiencing sport in the present where everything is happening right now and you have to settle on something that's going to be broadcast like a week or 5 days or a couple days in advance when you already know what's going to happen, it kind of takes some of the majesty out of it, because I feel like the sport is definitely, like most sports, it's enjoyed the most when you're watching live and you're watching it happen right in front of you. There's something that's missing when there's a disconnect when you're watching from a taped broadcast.
Absolutely, yeah. And like even afterwards, I think, like, extending on from that, even after the live broadcast, you know, because not everyone can watch a competition live, and, you know, the way figure skating works, there'll always be a part of the world that's, like, getting up at 2 a.m. to, you know, sit in their PJs and, like, scream at their computers. Yeah. But even after live broadcast... but even after live broadcast, I feel like there's that crucial period after a big event like the Olympics, but also like the World Championships or any of the big events, like that's the crucial period where you're amassing fans, right? Because if some skater puts out like this iconic or, you know, mind-blowing program, that's when the fans are most interested, and that's when like the people viewing casually are in the best like frame of mind to become fans.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the crucial time, and I just feel like there is such little like room that is currently provided for like fans to catch that. And I think we talked about this,
especially with YouTube is like a huge website where it's very possible to advertise the sport a lot by putting up, because they are, you know, short programs that a casual fan can watch like and get interested in figure skating, because in a way like the figure skating programs themselves are quite, you know, they're like, they're short, they have music, like a lot of them are very eye-catching. So it's like a very easy sport to just, hey, watch this 3-minute video and get interested.
And then go down the YouTube rabbit hole, you know.
That's how most of us started, I think. Like I started figure skating through, like I clicked on a video on YouTube and then just off I went. And after the Olympics, when people are talking, wow, did you see this performance? It was great. That's how you get into fans. And if the videos aren't on YouTube, then you lose like such a huge audience.
You lose that crucial momentum, I think. Like, you know, when people were talking about Virtue Moyes, like Moulin Rouge, like that was everywhere. Like people who weren't involved in figure skating were like, hey, you know, did you see that news article about that Moulin Rouge program? And the Olympic channel, you know, we want to view things officially. I think given the choice, most people would choose the official channel. If it makes them extra advertising money through YouTube sponsorship, then that's fine too. But how long did it take for them to upload that performance onto YouTube?
I think it took a couple of weeks, definitely. It took a couple of weeks. And they're doing that. They did that the same thing with all of the gold medal winners' free programs. They put them up at a very slow pace. And now they're just slowly, you know, dribbling out all the programs over the, like, next couple months.
The effect of the Olympics is not there anymore.
Mm.
And I think, like, you know, coming from, like, I watched during Sochi and I didn't stay in the fandom after. I think, and it's really because I didn't know how to continue watching the sport. I didn't know how to stay invested in the sport, so I just let it go. And then now Twitter has been a big part of helping me to stay in the fandom, which is good. But there still remains, you know, people might not always be on Twitter, you know, so there still needs to be more accessibility, especially with YouTube, because that also helps you It gives you a place to learn the sport. You can watch programs and learn the jumps, learn the judging. There's so many guide videos. So YouTube is a big area.
I find that also that not just on YouTube, but in general, it's really hard to find more videos of full competitions unless you're looking specifically for the Olympics. Like, I know that Ice Network has backups of full competitions, but apart from that, you just have to go fishing for singular programs on YouTube. And sometimes, especially if you want to catch up on something you missed, you don't want to go individually hunting down every single program.
Exactly.
You just want to sit in front of your computer and watch the whole thing play out. And I think that's really annoying for a lot of fans, just new and old, that you can't just go and sit down and watch a whole competition if you've missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's so crucial, especially for like the up-and-coming skaters, you know, apart from the big names. It's like seeing the full competition is how you, as fans, get invested in like the skaters who might not be as popular or who aren't podium, like making the podium all the time. And that's so crucial because figure skating, like if we drag in a little bit of a tangent here, but like figure skating is such like an underfunded sport comparatively to any other sport. You know, skaters have donation and fundraising pages, and what better way to like get them an invested group of supporters than being able to actually see their performances, you know? So yeah, I think there's so much lost in not being able to view an entire competition in context and kind of have the chance to, you know, have the spotlight shine on skaters other than, you know, the big names.
And I think also this is what happens when, for example, a competition is broadcasted on television and they only show like the last two groups of skaters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is such a pity because there are so many amazing skaters who go in like the first group who don't
definitely
get that.
Yeah, there's a lot of skaters that are not just, you know, from smaller federations, but there are also a lot of up and coming talents that might not have the world standing needed to go later in the programs. So you're missing out on a lot of, you know, really talented skaters that you wouldn't have known existed unless you watched the whole broadcast, which is really just not great in general.
Yeah, and especially with, like, you know, watching the full competition, you might miss a crucial, like, there are lots of comebacks from the short into the free. And just watching one of those, you might not get the full effect and learn more about that skater and what they've done.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, I think that when you miss the beginning, like, of the program for these up-and-coming skaters, you sort of, I think you just lose a sense of comparison as well between, like, you can kind of see the differences in variety of programs, you can see like the differences in jump layout. It's just, and like even in broadcast times, I think I can understand sometimes when they have to cut a broadcast short because of, you know, advertising restraints or budget, but it doesn't cost money to upload, like, you know, or it doesn't cost as much money to upload these things online and make them available online because it's happening. The broadcasters have recorded it anyway. Like,
definitely.
And if they're not planning to use it and make money off it, like on a regular broadcasting channel, why not upload it online and make it available for other people? Mm-hmm.
And even when the ISU live stream stuff on their website, it's usually region blocked or really hard to access or just generally doesn't work half the time. And then they do the only real bit of figure skating that gets decent coverage is the juniors because they're with the junior Grand Prix. That's all live streamed on YouTube and all of the programs are uploaded to the ISU's account. So, you know, that if we could have something like that for seniors, it would be great. But, you know, broadcasting rights and regulations and stuff, it, you know, messes everything up. So you probably couldn't have something like that. But just, it's really annoying.
It's hard to understand a little bit because I think it's one thing if the broadcasters were, you know, going to rebroadcast at some point or they were supplying alternatives for, you know, people subscribe to their network. But, you know, so many broadcasters will broadcast at once and then they'll just sit on the footage. And it seems like in this age where you can have, you know, real estate online isn't that expensive. So if you have the opportunity to, you know, make it available for fans and you're not going to be using it anyway, you know, it seems like such a sort of missed opportunity to not let that work in the background to kind of bring fans more into the sport so that you might get more audiences viewing during the official broadcast times.
Yeah, because I mean, this is stuff that is going to benefit them in the long run because it's going to create buzz and people are going to be able to share with their friends, get more people interested. But nobody's going to be interested if they find out that they have to access, for example, illegal streams, which I know a lot of fans do because there's no good option for them in their countries, for example. And we really don't want people to resort to illegal streams.
Exactly. Yeah. But often it's a case where if you want to catch something live, you know, and you're not in a country that where that's readily accessible to you, it is kind of how a lot of fans continue being involved in the fandom, because it is the only way at the moment.
Yeah. I just think, like, we can all agree that, like, you know, the ISU has said things about, you know, the sport dying and not getting as many fans, but there are things that they themselves could do to fix it.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah.
There was the whole thing after, you know, after the Olympics and during Worlds, where massive amounts of videos off YouTube were being deleted due to copyright claims. And the one particular YouTube channel, One TV Dance, was taken down completely. And, like, I can understand that from just, like, a legal perspective, that obviously you're uploading something with copyright, but also those kind of channels are a lifeline, not just to fans, but also the skaters themselves, like their families and stuff. They don't usually they can't watch live. They need to watch their kids, their relatives, their friends perform. They only have this kind of option to find their programs on YouTube, and now they're actively taking them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, it's one thing if they provided an alternative that was legal and, you know, was accessible to a wide range of audiences, but they're not. And so that's what makes it, I think, you know, not a good thing, or something that makes it very questionable.
Yeah, and also going after what happened at the Olympics, going after people who were making GIFs
moments,
which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think it's really worth emphasizing, I think, how fan work is really integral in the figure skating ecosystem, because, you know, the way that fans drive, you know, awareness of the sport, the way that the sport survives in between events is through fans creating content. It's fans, you know, tweeting about it. It's making, like, it's, you know, sharing photos, it's sharing clips, it's making these beautiful, like, gift sets. And it just is confusing to me why that is the focus of what, you know, what the officials of the sport are doing, instead of, you know, trying to encourage that kind of thing. And, you know, why are you spending your energy on taking these things down for copyright when what they're doing is essentially promoting your sport? It's free marketing. It's passionate, invested marketing.
Yeah.
It baffles me.
And it also, besides the fact that it is not good for new fans, it also alienates a lot of longtime fans who can't really understand why they can't share photos of their favorite skaters, and sort of really makes people angry as well at because they feel like all of this misguided misdirection.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And like when you especially with baby fans, with, like, you know, the first time fans and stuff, they don't know where to go for things most of the time.
Exactly.
And the ISU doesn't make a lot of the information about where to get streams or anything really public. You have to really dig for it. I remember when I first got into figure skating, I was relying so much on just sources that other fans have made, and there's nothing official. There's nothing official out there for us.
I think it's worth emphasizing how much work actually went into these, like, fan guides. You know, these are thesis level detailed, you know, guides on jumps. It's guides on how the GPs and the events work. These are such crucial kind of pieces of information, and fans are doing that all for free. And it just seems, like Tilda said, very misguided to be targeting those fans instead of trying to think of ways to work with them and to kind of, you know, create a system that integrates all of that media so that you can kind of ultimately promote the sport better.
Can I just say that the ISU website is very, very confusing.
Yep.
Very difficult to find things. Just information about events. It's like you click one link and then you have to go through, like, all of these.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's jumping through hoops with fire, with sharks.
Yeah. With ice, icy winds.
Trying to find the protocols, for example, after a competition, it's like they don't want you to find them.
Yeah, I remember that was a struggle when I first got into the fandom. I had no idea where to find the protocols and the full judges scores. I was just like, where in the hell did you put these, ISU? You're not making the freaking sport accessible if you're going to hide them away on some really crappy HTML-based website.
Yeah,
I like remember trying to like go on the website during my early days, which was like 2 months ago. And I was just like, yeah, that was my one and done. I'm never going back to this website until I fully understand it. But like going off the whole like GIF crackdown and fan work crackdown, I'm really glad that I was on Twitter during the Olympics to get that before it was taken, because if that wasn't there for me, I don't know if I'd be here as I am now.
And especially during the off season, I think.
Yes, exactly.
There's not a lot happening during the off season, so it's really the fans who keep the excitement going, who keep like discussing new programs, photos from ice shows, for example, to sort of keep the momentum during the very long summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very
important. It's a long off season.
Yeah, it's very important to keep that momentum going, and taking away those sources can really be detrimental to the amount of fans you have and people invested in the sport you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like speaking of taking away sources, like last week or the week beforehand was when US Figure Skating announced the end of Ice Network streaming, and all of the services are going to be moving to NBC. I mean, Ice Network's been around for years, and it's a platform that fans know and, well, not really love, but you know what I mean. Occasionally appreciate the existence of when the website works. It's been there, and it's a pretty good source of news and updates and stuff, and it has the live streaming, and now all of the fans are going to have to go somewhere else to NBC and spend who knows how much money accessing their streams and stuff.
But even as an Australian fan, like, I can't pay for NBC. You know, it's geo-blocked, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So, it just begs the question, I guess, of how much the organizers are aware that the fan base is international, and that there is there's a huge base of fans in, you know, Southeast Asia, in South America, that are not entirely in Europe as well, who are willing to be more involved and to pay for official streams, but are just not given the opportunity. And, you know, and the reason why there is this base is because of the other fans who do have access, like providing like resources out of their own generosity and out of their own time. So it's a complicated ecosystem, I think, and it is something that I think could benefit from a bit of examination by those who are in official positions and positions of power.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, broken another record here with that free skate.
Oh, without a doubt.
So now we're going to be talking about Yevgenia Medvedeva's move to Brian Orser and her leave from Eteri.
Right.
I think that was the biggest, news of this entire off-season so
far.
The
most surprising.
The most surprising, for sure. I think what I think would be interesting to talk about in relation to this news is everyone's just talked extensively about, you know, what the potential changes are and whatnot. So there's no shortage of discussion about what she'll be like in the future. But I think what's kind of interesting to see was kind of how the entire thing broke over the like fandom spaces and over Twitter spaces. And so like I think one of the biggest things that came out of this whole thing was me feeling like, wow, like you really, it's so important when these sorts of things happen to be very skeptical and to be very like measured and rational about these news sources, because a big thing like this, there will be so many articles coming out that may not be verified, that could be rumors wrapped up in a grain of truth. It could be, you know, people just giving their opinions based on things that were not confirmed. And I think it's a good lesson to take away for a lot of new fans that, like, you know, I think I saw a lot of new fans just really freaked out by just how intense the entire fandom was. You know, you had this combination of like Twitter freakouts, you had people sharing articles left and right from like various sources, and then people tweeting out rumors translated from Russian forums who were like hearsay.
Google translated Russian articles.
Google translated Russian articles. So I think it's just a real reminder that, like, you know, figure skating fandom is incredibly international, and at the same time, that's amazing, but also that as new fans and as, you know, just consumers of media, I think it's really important to double check sources, to not freak out too badly until you've heard, you know, official confirmation, and to like sometimes just take a step back.
Yeah, with official confirmation stuff, like what the rumors broke like a week ago that she was, you know, was leaving Atari, or was suspected to have left. Yeah, exactly. She was, there was the rumors about that, you know, she was going to stay in Russia. She was going to stay at the rink, you know. Oh, she might be moving to Toronto and training with Brian. She might be moving overseas and training with another coach. There's so many different little bits. Representing our media. My favorite rumor. But just, it's just, you look at all of these things and you're just like, okay, let's take a step back for a second. We don't have official confirmation from the Russian, Fed about what the hell is happening. Let's not jump to speculation quite yet, because there's really not that much point in doing that other than creating a panic.
But the, the worst part is also that a lot of online newspapers were jumping on it. Media sources and saying, you know, like way before it was confirmed as well, saying that, yeah, she's definitely moving to Toronto, or at least wording it in a way that people interpreted as if it had been confirmed when it in fact hadn't.
I saw a bunch of articles, both English and Russian articles that I Google translated, that said that, you know, she was suspected to have, like, she's expected to go to Toronto and train with Brian Orser. Like, they would end the article like that, and it would be very ambiguous. But at the same time, that was back when the official confirmation wasn't through. So you just, you know, clickbaiting, maybe?
Yeah,
there's a lot of
she's
clickbait.
She's expected to move. It's very vague phrase. And also the Armenia thing, you know, didn't they have an interview with someone and they asked, could she move to Armenia? And the person said, well, you know,
she could,
say anything
but,
about
you know,
it because there's nothing to it. So you can't really like deny something like that, you know, that hasn't even been discussed.
It seems that when the representing Armenia thing broke, that someone just looked at her Wikipedia page and saw that her dad was from Armenia and was like, hey, we can make a story out of that.
Yeah, and then they asked someone to, like, could she switch to Armenia? And the person was like,
I mean, I guess.
Maybe.
She could, but then you also have to think about, like, she would have to take a year off. She would have to take a year off international competition before the ISU would let her represent Armenia. And, like, a year in ladies figure skating, that's, like, practically half a lifetime.
I think, in the context of, you know, when these sorts of panics are happening, I think that's why, as fans, you know, I think it's important to appreciate that while, you know, you might be feeling like, oh, that this is huge news, I'm freaking out about it. I think when everyone kind of jumps on that without checking to see if it's confirmed, that's when it becomes this huge, it snowballs into an almost panic. And so it is kind of, you know, in the interest of having fandom be like a good and enjoyable place, like sometimes that's something to keep in mind when these sorts of, you know, news and rumors break out.
Again, the sea of flags from Japan.
So now we're going to be moving on to talking about Dancing with the Stars, which stars Adam Rippon, Mirai Nagasu, and Tanya Harding.
Yay!
Good old Tanya.
Can I just say how amazing it is that the videos were uploaded, like, right away, so...
accessibility.
Yeah, that's great! Can't figure skating do that? You know, people were making jokes on Twitter, like, oh, you know... It's funny how you can see them dance like immediately, but you can't watch them skate immediately after. It's funny, even though they are skaters. But it's
it is a thing. They are on it. They are both doing very well, considering like the rest of the other people. Well, I mean, let me preface that by saying Mariah and Adam are doing very well. You know, there is the other one.
Yeah, and we can go on to talk about how the documentary I, Tanya has affected the views of Tanya Harding.
But not documentary.
Yeah.
Based on a true story.
The mockumentary.
It's quite interesting how, I guess, I, Tanya, you know, if I understood it correctly, it was always like marketed as a kind of black comedy where the whole idea was that it revolved around unreliable narrators. You know, it was not meant to present like a particular viewpoint as fact. It was meant to kind of draw your attention to the fact that there were so many conflicting accounts of what happened. There was like Tonya's testimony, there was her husband's, and then there was also this focus on how the viewer, like as this curious, you know, public, how, you know, we as the audience contribute to the framing of this narrative. And I think, like, I don't know if it's because the movie was made in a way that made it like that, where the conflicting perspectives thing didn't come through properly, or if it was just the way that the audience reacted to it. But there's a concerning number of people sort of taking it as just complete fact and accepting it completely on face value. And I think to a lot of people who had lived through that time, there'd been articles written about how they just saw this entire thing as kind of a retcon of history. You know, it's like one view prevailing over the other and Nancy Kerrigan's side of the story being ignored.
Well, I mean, for a lot of us fans, I mean, first of all, we're internationals fans, so we don't really have a stake in the story. And then second of all, a lot of us are too young to really have been there at the time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, it's a good story. It's
definitely
a really good story.
Yes, exactly.
And it's very engaging, and I liked watching the movie. And then a lot of people sort of don't realize that there, you know, this is there is a truth, and there is a way to engage with this appropriately, because, you know, she was banned from figure skating, and it's not like, it's not a cute movie story. It's like real people's lives, and a lot of people wanted to make it to sort of, you know, with her comeback, with Dancing with the Stars, it's like cute end to a story.
The media loves hero narratives. The media loves redemption arcs. But it is worth questioning whether or not such a redemption arc
is deserved.
Deserved or even necessary.
Or
is necessary, perhaps.
Because it is very odd to look at it from like from sort of an outside perspective, to see, you know, what happened in the past, and then to see how the movie sort of brought back this entire discussion, like even that we're just discussing it right now, is kind of strange with how far back it was, and then her comeback to Dancing with the Stars. And it's like, it seems like a huge narrative just like created for like the perfect story for clickbait articles, basically, or it's kind of uncomfortable to me, you know, as an outsider as well.
I definitely get that, yeah. So we'll include links in the bio of this episode with Mirai and Adam and Tonya's performances on Dancing with the Stars from the last couple of weeks. So if people haven't seen them, you can go have a look there and enjoy the dancing of the figure skaters.
This guy, it's ridiculous what he does.
So moving on, we really want to talk about the sort of trickling of new program news that's sort of happening in off season. And this happens every year and always comes kind of through a variety of sources. So we had a bunch of ice shows happening in Japan. So there have been sort of glimpses of news footage from Japanese TV. There have been some updates on social media through Russian Twitter and Instagram, and also through some like US ice shows as well. So I think we can, I think we're going to talk about our favorite new programs introduced so far, because it's always an exciting topic. So Tilda, I think you had some thoughts.
So I'm a real fan of Wakabahiguchi. I think she's a terrific skater, and she debuted a Michael Jackson program, which possibly could be a new exhibition. It's quite long, apparently like around 5 minutes. And I, just from like short clips and photos, I think it looks great. And especially, I really like that she seems to be trying out new styles and expressions, like getting a wider range, which I think is like super fun, because I always love when skaters try to, you know, test their limits, test new things, and, you know, take some risks. And
absolutely.
I really hope that we can see a video of it soon enough. Because it really seems like she's having fun with it. So I love that.
I really appreciate like ladies' programs that do kind of push the envelope a little bit, you know, things that are a bit more upbeat, a little bit more, just a little bit different, I think, is always refreshing to kind of see. And I'm really excited.
Yeah, a lot of people use, you know, this, we talk about War Horses, like people using the same music over and over. So for me, it's always like a lot of fun to see people try new music that hasn't really been used in figure skating before, because there's so much potential. You can, you know, make it yours.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's like my favorite thing about, especially with, you know, bringing back to the accessibility and watching the whole competitions, you get such a range of music.
Absolutely.
And that's what I love, is hearing different interpretations of music that we may not have heard before.
Yeah. And definitely. I love that they can use lyrics now. I think that really brings sort of an extra dimension to it as well.
Carly, I know that you wanted to talk about a new program as well.
Well, I'm, you know, kind of like what Tilda talked about with Wakaba doing something that was outside of her limits. Shoma Uno is bringing a program to Henry Connick Jr.'s Time After Time, and it's also more outside of the box for him. And I'm just very excited to see any skater really do something that's both outside of their, you know, comfort zone, and just in general outside of the sport's comfort zone, music-wise.
We saw some clips of Shoma skating to a jazz program, and you know, I think people were pointing out how the choreography, because he was working with David Wilson, you know, how it was very Canadian, and it was hard to kind of describe what Canadian style choreography was. But you know, I think Shoma in an interview said himself that this was like a new style that he was kind of herding everywhere, because he was doing new things, new moves that we hadn't seen before. And I think that's just wonderful, you know, to kind of have skaters push like and work with different choreographers and kind of really push to show something new. And right. It's what a better time to do it than the start of a new quad, you know, where I think the first year is always like the year of experimentation and taking risks and kind of defining yourself in preparation for this new
I'm very excited to be here for it
cycle.
And I'm also excited for Shoma's Shailin Bourne exhibition as well.
Was it Great Spirit?
And we haven't really seen any footage so far.
We've seen like 2 seconds of it from Japanese TV.
And some pictures, and it looks very, very different. So
different being the main word.
Well,
I think I really I'm really interested in seeing that that Kazuki Tomono has put out a new program at Prince Ice World, the ice show in Japan, to Daft Punk. And now obviously that, like, Kazuki hasn't really been around for long on the senior circuit. You know, it was his first senior season this season, and he really smashed it out of the park at Worlds.
Yes, completely, he did.
Yes. Like, saved the men's free skate. And
definitely.
I'm really interested to see how he's going to tackle the music once we see the full program. And plus, we know that from a couple of days ago that it got confirmed that he's getting a Misha G short program for next season, which is really so going to... Oh, I'm so freaking excited for it, because Misha, I feel with his choreography, he really gives skaters new and interesting movements that you don't see a lot of choreographers give skaters, like stuff like Anna Pogorelia's Scent of a Woman, you know, really crazy, new, fun, you know, really just fresh stuff, which I really can't wait to see what he's going to bring to
Kazuki's. And I think it helps also that Misha is quite young. A lot of these choreographers are quite old, and they may not really have sort of...
Stefan Lambiel would like a word with you.
Old might be a relative expression here, but you're right in that I think it always helps to have like a new perspective. And, you know, I think the young, like the sort of new choreographers, people who are just starting out, really kind of bring something fresh to the table. And so hopefully that's good experience for them as well.
Also introducing more contemporary music.
Definitely.
And with Misha, like, just coming off the ice, like, you know, he's still, not to bring in the whole younger thing, but more contemporary.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
And then we see the opposite end of the spectrum, Alina Sagitova doing a short program to Phantom of the Opera. And... of course,
obligatory post-Olympics program music.
You know, I'm not a fan of Phantom of the Opera as music.
Wow, I didn't know that, Tilda.
I'm sorry. Anyone who knows me knows that I don't like the musical itself. I'm sorry. But also, it's been used a lot before, and there's been some good programs to Phantom of the Opera. But like we talked about, it's always exciting to see people try new things, try new expressions, new range. And then I feel like it's not very exciting to see these.
It's a little disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of, especially since we're just coming off the back of the Olympic season, where skaters, you know, tend to go for the safer music choices, going, like, into the new, like, into the 18-19 season with the Phantom of the Opera program.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it also, there's always ways of making war horses, like, fresh, and there's ways of kind of making it something different. It just really depends. I think with war horses, you just really need to think outside the box when it comes to, you know, music cuts or like what choreography, what aspects of that particular musical you want to focus on. And I think where the criticism of war horses comes from is the very fact that, you know, that people tend to kind of fall back on cliched
parts,
or like cliched cuts of music or cliched aspects to highlight in the choreography. So I don't think necessarily like criticism against war horses themselves is always like going to be a default, but it really just places such a huge duty on the part of the choreographer and the people coming up with the concept of the program to kind of, you know, do something different with it. And it's, you know, it's obviously tougher than with a completely new piece of music. There wasn't a flicker of doubt, it seemed. And to sort of finish off the podcast, I thought we could maybe conclude with a recap of this whirlwind of an Olympic season. And I guess maybe our favourite moments, our defining favourite moments.
Well, I think probably the standout moment for me during the season was, obviously the Olympics had a lot of special moments, but one of the ones that made a significant impact with me was Virtue and Moya's second win at the Olympics, and especially with their Moulin Rouge program in the free skate. When I first heard they were doing Moulin Rouge, I was like, okay, you know, war horse program, that's okay. And then as we see the program develop over the season, you know, it just gets better and better and better to the fact that, you know, at Canadian Nationals, it got a completely perfect score. And then at the Olympics, we see them completely smash it out of the park and win that second Olympic gold. And you could just, you could see how emotional they were. And it completely blew me out of the water.
Oh, yeah, so good.
That was definitely the highlight for me.
Yeah, definitely an Olympic highlight. For me, so I said I was a fan of Weka Bahiguchi, right? And she did not have a great season. She wasn't put on the Olympic team, and which was of course like a huge disappointment for her and also for me as a fan, since I was definitely cheering for her. So it was very disappointing. And then she came back at Worlds and she had an amazing free skate and, you know, truly spectacular. And she really put everything out there and ended up with a silver medal, which was quite unexpected. And to me, that was just like such an, you know, this is why I watch figure skating. This is, to me, what it's like to be a figure skating fan, to have these moments, like you don't expect them, and then they just hit you with these incredible stories. And, you know, when someone just skates their very, very best at a very critical moment, and then, you know, you have these moments where you can see them crying, just overwhelmed with emotion, and to experience that as a fan is just amazing.
Like, for me, you know, my favorite moments of the season, I'm sort of a newer fan, so I haven't been here for this whole season, but, and you know, the Olympics were a really cool time, but something that had an effect on me was Kazuki's free skate from Worlds 2018. And, you know, we saw how he did in the short, and it was a senior Worlds debut. He was there, you know, kind of as an alternate, and he did so well in the short. And to go and perform that way in the free skate and have things more or less riding on him, and, you know, the savior of the free skate, of course, it just, like, I go back and watch that, and it just gets me really emotional, and I'm very proud. And, you know, even though I haven't known of all these skaters for a long time, it just makes me really happy to see people do that well. And just his skate overall was very emotional for me. And then I also have to agree with Tilda that Wakaba's free skate was incredible, and I pretty much cry every time I watch it, which is a lot, because it was so good. And I made my parents watch it, and they were also fans. But overall, Kazuki's free skate was just, it gets me every time.
And I mean, I think for me, the season has been characterized by horrific injuries happening left, right, and center, especially during the GP series. So yep. It was a tough season, I think. And the two performances for me that really just kind of, it kind of, again, it makes figure skating, like, you can't make this up. You can't make these narratives up. You know, they're more vivid than any sort of novel you can come up with. But for me, it was firstly, like, Boyang Jin's Four Continents free skate and his short program. Making that comeback after injury in his first competition back, it was just, I was just crying. Like, it, the emotions of knowing how hard that, like, how hard he's had to struggle through rehabilitation, and sort of seeing that triumph, is, that's, again, that's why we watch figure skating, I think. And
definitely,
you know, and I can't finish that without inserting obligatory Yuzuru reference.
Wow.
Big surprise. big surprise. But again, I think the story of overcoming injury and of having it, like, of holding your nerve in your first competition back, I think that's always such a relatable and crucial thing for any skater who's been out for so long. And not all comebacks will go the way that Boyang and Yuzu's did, but I think it's something to, there's something to be said about how they did that.
So in 2 weeks, our next episode will be hosted by Kite, Iman and Kat, and they'll be discussing the iconic programs from the 2000s, as well as talking about commentary and its impacts on the sport as a whole.
And if you want to get in touch with us, then please feel free to contact us via our Twitter at InTheLowPodcast. We're open to suggestions, to feedback, you know, commentary, anything that you want to share with us. So thanks for listening. This has been Leigh,
Tilda,
Evie,
and Carly. See you soon.